On this week's episode, we talk about music from The Smithereens, Tom Waits, The Who, and John Prine. We talk about TV, including The Deadliest Catch, Last Man on Earth, and just a little bit of wrestling for good measure. And we bid a heartfelt farewell to Harry Anderson, Bruno Sammartino, and Vern Troyer. It's a shorter episode, but it's jam-packed with stuff. As always, I'm your host, Derek Brink, and you are listening to Empty Checking. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Empty Checking, the show that knows that just because it says limited edition, that doesn't mean that it's good. Hope everybody's week is going okay, mine's going pretty good. I'm actually glad to be doing the show right now. I didn't think I was going to get a chance to this week. I've got some stuff going on in the old personal life there that I've had a busy week, and I didn't think I was going to have any time to do this, but I had something canceled at the last minute, so I had just enough room to get a show together. So it's good to be talking to you. One of the things that I've got going that is taking up some of my time is I am very, very close to putting out my next solo album titled It Could Be Worse. That should be out in time for Memorial Day, if everything goes to plan. I'm looking forward to it. It's a good album. You can pick it up later when it's when I actually have the date solidified and everything looks positive. I'll start saying the date on the show and whatnot, and I'll post it on all my social media and stuff. Speaking of social media, by the way, if you like the show, you can check out our companion blog at emptychecking.blogspot.com. The show itself is hosted at soundcloud.com/emptychecking. We're searchable on iTunes. You just go to the podcast section, start typing Empty Checking with Derek Brink, and we come right up. The same, by the way, is true of CastBox, which I didn't even try to set up. I don't know why I had to have iTunes approve it. CastBox is actually my favorite podcasting app for your phone, and we're searchable there, too, with Empty Checking. With Derek Brink. You can find us there. I thought that was really cool. This is, by the way, in no way a paid sponsorship. I just happened to like CastBox, and I was excited to find the show on there. If you want to know more about me, including my music career, you can go over to DerekBrink.com, and everything's there, plenty of stuff to click on. Or if you like the music that you hear throughout the show, it is my stuff, and it's available for absolutely free at DerekBrink.bandcamp.com. I don't even collect your email address. Been a big week with a lot of stuff happening, some sad stuff happening. There have been some celebrity deaths in this past week. We lost Harry Anderson, beloved Judge Harry T. Stone from Night Court. I'm a big Night Court fan, always loved Night Court. I used to stay up late in my bedroom with my little black and white TV that was like 3 inches wide, I think, and my parents thought I was asleep, but I'm watching Night Court, you know, and I've always had a soft spot for Night Court and for Harry Anderson. I was sad to hear that that he left us at just the age of 65, had apparently a stroke-type condition, and left us a little bit too early there. Although at 65 is one of those ages where it's not exactly unfair that someone has passed away. It's not, like, so young that it's unfair, but it's young enough that it doesn't seem like everything was finished yet at the same time. So I was sad to hear about Harry Anderson. I'm a fan of his. I have been dedicating my fedora wearing all week to him, because he was known to rock a good fedora. So if you see me walking around in a fedora this week, that's for Harry Anderson. Of course, we also lost Vern Troyer, perhaps best known as Mini-Me from the Austin Powers flicks. Unfortunately, that might be his most dignified role. I don't have a lot to say about Vern Troyer. I read a little bit about his life and kind of how things went for him, and it's kind of a sad story. I hope he's at peace now. That was a bummer to hear. I'm not an avid fan of his. I don't seek out his stuff, but when he'd show up in something, it was always kind of nice to kind of go, oh, hey, it's Vern Troyer. Neat to see him again, you know. So that was sad too. In the wrestling world, we lost one of the guys who goes on the Mount Rushmore of wrestling, in Bruno Sammartino. Bruno Sammartino was Hulk Hogan before Hulk Hogan was Hulk Hogan. He was the guy that kind of put wrestling on the map. He's Madison Square Garden is the house that Bruno built, and he was such a cornerstone in the WWF and, well, probably WWWF and the early days of the industry. And well-respected man, well-respected name. The WWE has been paying tribute to him on their shows all week. That's been great to see. I listened to Jim Cornette's podcast, wrestling manager slash personality Jim Cornette. I listened to his podcast pretty regularly, and I got to hear his co-host, the great Brian Last, break the news to Jim, and you could kind of hear Cornette's heart just sink when it set into him that Bruno was gone. So that was an interesting listen. And Brian Last on that show told the story that when he was a kid and he'd be walking around with his pro wrestling magazines and stuff, if he'd go into a store, any adult that stopped him and talked to him about wrestling asked him if he knew who Bruno Sammartino was. Bruno was a little bit before my time. I didn't get to watch him wrestle, but even not having seen him wrestle, I know the name and I know the impact. He's just one of those guys. He goes on the Mount Rushmore of wrestling. And as you know, if you've listened to the show before, I'm a huge wrestling fan, have been all my life, and yes, I know it's fake, that's okay. But Bruno was one of those guys that, he was the cornerstone of even if you knew it was fake, you would watch one of his matches and think it might be real. He was one of the greats. So definitely wanted to say rest in peace to Bruno Sammartino here at the start, along with Vern Troyer and Harry Anderson, which is got to be in running for weirdest death trilogy of the year so far, but each one of those guys, well-respected name in their own right, and great at what they did in their own right, and they'll all be missed. So I wanted to say that on the show, because the show is all about pop culture, and all three of those things fit in, the whole empty checking thing. I've certainly emptied out my checking account on their projects and stuff related to them before, so rest in peace to those guys. That's a bummer of a way to start the show, but it's I wanted to do it there rather than spread it out throughout the show and make the whole thing depressing. although I could talk about Night Court for hours on end. If anybody wants to come on and do a Night Court show with me, let's set that up, because I would love to talk about Night Court for 4 hours. But we'll move on to other things for now. We've got some music and TV to talk about here this week. And that's about it. That's all we're going to touch on. Last week's show was a lot of fun for me, the Pearl Jam episode. If you missed it, go back and listen to it. I enjoyed doing that one. That one was a lot of fun for me, and there was a lot of background preparation in it, and I talked for a long time on one subject, and I had a good time with it, and there was a lot of positive feedback on that. I appreciate that. I appreciate everybody that's talked to me or commented, or those who shared the link. That really meant a lot. That was really cool. Thanks for that. But I'm going to keep it simple this week. I'm going to rein it in and just keep it simple this week. I like doing the theme shows, though, so look for more of those here in the future. But for this week, we're going to talk about a couple of music things, a couple of things I've picked up lately, and we'll talk about some stuff that I've watched on TV, and then we'll be out of here. We'll just keep it basic. So here's a little bit of something from my musical career, and we'll come back in and we'll talk about some music after that, which is fitting since you're going to be listening to music. I'll shut up. Here you go. Used to see no point in having dreams, no tomorrow and no future, no refunds, no regrets. That was me. One of the main things that we need to talk about, if we're going to talk about music and collecting and what we're spending money on as music collectors, is Record Store Day has come and gone. Record Store Day was this past weekend over the 21st, I believe. That was Saturday. I didn't really participate in Record Store Day in the way that I have in the past. There have been past years where I've been up early and stood in a long line for hours at a time and snaked my way through a record store just to get to the front and find that all the stuff that I really wanted was already gone. I don't have the energy for that at this point in my life. Uh, I I support record stores. I go to record stores regularly, as you're aware if you're a fan of the show. But the record store day thing is a little bit, I'm not a huge fan of the event anymore. It's gotten a little bit ridiculous with an industry creating such a limited run of stuff to make just a crazy demand and people buying them up and just flipping them on eBay. And I don't know. The record store day event sometimes feels like it does more harm than good to those of us who are avid daily collectors. I actually went into a record store today, the day I'm recording this, and talked to... I went to lovely Euclid Records here in Maplewood, Missouri. I like Euclid Records a lot. It's one of my favorites. And I was talking to one of the guys there, and one of the guys that works there, and he asked if I made it in on Saturday for record store day, and I said, no, I saw the photos online and figured I wouldn't get within a block of the place. And he was just kind of saying, yeah, man, it was nuts in here. And we had a decent chat for a while, and I said to him the same thing I'll say to you, that I don't mean any disrespect to anybody in saying this, but I'm at the point in my collecting that record store day just kind of feels like it's in my way. Because I've got an idea of what I want to buy, and there are all these people there that I've got to throw elbows at to get to the good stuff, and that... If that's your thing, that's fine. I'm going to sleep in on Saturday, and I just don't make it down for the big event anymore. But I did pick through scraps on the following Sunday, and actually, one of the guys at Euclid said, yeah, it's kind of funny, record store day is one of the days that we don't see a lot of our regulars, because a lot of them apparently are like me and just kind of stay home and pick through the scraps later. And I did pick through the scraps, and I only picked up a couple of things, but I'm happy with both of them, and I'm actually probably going to go back and pick up some more, because I know there's a little bit more hanging around, and it'll be available. But I was able to find on beautiful green vinyl the Smithereens Play Tommy, which is the band The Smithereens, performing all of The Who's rock opera Tommy. And I knew they had done that. They're big Who fans, and they've got a live album out there that's actually mixed a lot like Live at Leeds. That's a wonderful listen, and they're very Who influenced and Who based. And they, I think, on their Christmas album, they even did a cover of Christmas off the Tommy record. So that's kind of an interesting thing, just out of nowhere. You know, did you ever see the Faces of the Children? Yeah. Yeah, I picked up The Smithereens Play Tommy, and it's a pretty faithful rendition. It sounds great. It's a lot of fun. I like anybody who's a Who fan, I love Tommy. Tommy is one of the gateway things that got me into the Who as a kid. By the way, there is one of these days going to be a Who episode that comes up, but I mean, that might be a 3-hour long show, and I will probably have to have others in on it. I don't know if I have the emotional energy to make it through a episode on the Who on my own. There's probably going to have to be others involved in that. One day there will be a Who episode. For now, just know that I love them, and Tommy was integral to that. So it's kind of cool to hear other bands paying tribute to them, and the cover of the thing's really cool. It's done up kind of like an old Tales from the Crypt comic book, and the art's really cool. You can check that out on the blog at emptychecking.blogspot.com. I'll have a picture of that up there, and I'll throw in a picture of the beautiful green wax that it's on. It was a cool purchase. I've really enjoyed listening to it here in the past few days. Also, out of the record store day stuff, I picked up one of the Tom Waits reissues of the Orphans series. The Orphans series is known as Brawlers, Ballers, and Bastards. It's just a bunch of stuff that he kind of had sitting around, and he made a 3-part album deal out of it. I picked up the Ballers entry of that, the kind of softer stuff, because I like that disc particularly out of that 3-disc set. It was originally on CD, is why I'm saying disc, and I really like the Ballers segment of that. Bend Down the Branches, Long Way Home. The Fannin Street, for God's sake, that's one of my favorite Tom Waits songs. Goodnight Irene is on there. Down There by the Train, just a wonderful Tom Waits song. It's a great record. I'm glad to have this on vinyl, and it's on beautiful blue vinyl for Record Store Day. And it's cool. Sooner or later, I'm going to go back and pick up the other two entries in that, or at least the first one. The Bastards entry is just kind of weird studio experiments, some of which work and some of which don't. I don't feel as obligated to get that one, but I would like to get the Brawlers one of these days. The problem with it is the Orphans records there are high-priced items, and I feel a little bit too high-priced. I'm sure that sooner or later they'll come out on just plain black vinyl and just a standard release, and I might wait for that to get the other two entries. I don't necessarily need the cool colored vinyl Record Store Day release. I'd be perfectly happy with black vinyl for about $10 less, but it's nice to have this in my collection. Those are really the only two things I picked up for Record Store Day. I was looking for the Descendants single that came out, but I didn't find it. It wasn't anywhere that I went. If anybody bumps into that, grab it for your old buddy Derek and I'll pay you back. But that's the only thing I wanted that I couldn't find this year. And as it seems like the stuff that is any good on the Record Store Day releases eventually gets a subsequent release on a compilation or in a box set or its own release or something anyway, so I'm not that worried about it. But I would have liked to have the Descendants one as well. I've enjoyed the two that I picked up, so as much as I don't want to do the to-do of Record Store Day, I certainly am enjoying the product. So that was my Record Store Day purchasing, but I also did some purchasing beyond that. Because the week prior to that came out an album that I was very excited about because he's your favorite singer-songwriter's favorite singer-songwriter. John Prine put out a new album called The Tree of Forgiveness. And it's a wonderful listen. It's folksy, it's acoustic-y, it's a very intimate listen. It's a guy who's getting up there in age, who has finally grown comfortable with his voice, and his voice has a very lived-in feel and a very natural conversational feel in how he sings these days. And John Prine has always been a great songwriter. People cover his stuff left and right, and you almost definitely know a John Prine song and don't know that you know it. And his new one, The Tree of Forgiveness, has some real gems on there and some really beautiful performances. And it's nice to hear somebody at his age, A, still doing it at all, but B, still doing it and being well regarded and well received doing it. And it's not just his aging fans with them. There's people in their 20s grabbing John Prine albums, and that's really cool. And I'm in my 30s and I grabbed a John Prine album. I'm creeping up on my 40s and I grabbed a John Prine album, so whatever that means, but Tree of Forgiveness is wonderful. In fact, the first time I heard it, I just kind of went to my Facebook feed and just immediately typed, stop whatever you're doing and pick up the new John Prine album. And that's my advice to you as you're listening right now, if you haven't done it already. It's a great listen. It's the kind of listen that you just sort of sink into, and it warms you up a little bit. And that's a wonderful thing. It's already one of my favorite albums of 2018, and it's only been out a couple of weeks, so that's saying a lot. So John Prine's Tree of Forgiveness, I absolutely recommend that. The other thing that I picked up that I have to mention is, keeping with the Who theme from the Smithereens record I mentioned earlier, I picked up the Who's release of the Live at the Fillmore East concert from 1968. That's one of those concerts that's thought of as a holy grail show for Who fans. It's one of those shows that you were just told would never see the light of day in a physical release, and it finally has. And it's night two of two. Night one, the tapes were destroyed years ago. That I think they never recorded properly, if memory serves. But they had night two, and they just never really did anything with it. It's an interesting listen because it's 1968, so it's the four original members of the Who. Tommy hasn't come out yet. Martin Luther King was assassinated the week that they played there, so there was civil unrest going on in the streets. Things were nuts. It was a crazy time, and they played these couple of shows that were supposed to be released between the Who sellout and Tommy. And they never were, because the mics failed on the first show, but they had the second sitting around. So that's finally seen the light of day, and it's a really interesting listen. It's a fascinating snapshot of a really interesting time for The Who. However, I also feel that it's a little bit of a product of its time. I believe it was done on, like, 4-track recording, and I think it suffers for that. There's some of the drums aren't very clear. There's some low end missing. There's a couple of times in some of the extended jam sessions where Entwistle turns up a little bit and it actually sounds like The Who. But it's a little bit of a thin listen, unfortunately. Not a lot you could do about that. You're limited by what materials you have to work with, and you've got old tapes that you're trying to put into a new format, and something's got to give. But it is a really interesting listen, and it's a really interesting set list. There's The Who energy is there, but the sound just isn't. There's something not quite right in the mix, at least in my opinion. I'm sure people out there who absolutely love it. I like it. I've been really enjoying listening to it driving around, but it's just one of those things where I hear it and I think, well, there are better mixes out there. But nevertheless, it's one of those shows that you never thought you'd get to hear, and now you get to hear it. So that's really cool. Just for the sake of hearing it, for the sake of knowing that you've heard the Fillmore concert, it's cool to have it. So I've got it, and I'm enjoying it. And if you're a Who fan, it kind of belongs in your collection, because it's one of those things that you were always supposed to have and never did. So it's out there now. I bought it on CD personally because it was about $20 cheaper than the 4-sided vinyl. 5-sided vinyl? I'm not really sure. The vinyl was way too much money. So I bought the double disc CD. My Generation is a half hour long, by the way. Get yourself ready for that. That's actually the era of The Who I don't love as much, because there's too much of the long rambling jam stuff. They were very good at that, but My Generation is a half hour long, and it really doesn't need to be. So it's one of those things that I'm really glad to have with a couple of caveats. You know, I'm a Who fan, and I'm a collector of Who stuff, so I'm absolutely thrilled that it even exists. But at the same time, it's from that interesting snapshot when they were coming out of being a singles pop band and playing songs like I'm a Boy regularly, and they hadn't quite gotten to Tommy yet, and Townsend's head, I'm sure, was already deeply immersed in what was supposed to be Lifehouse and instead became Who's Next. I'm sure that I'm sure he was all over the place, and the band probably was too, but it's kind of that interesting transitional period between The Who being a power pop standard type band, just writing, you know, simple singles to get on the radio, and becoming the serious concept album band that we grew to know and love later. So it's a fascinating snapshot of a very strange window in The Who's career. And it's a fun listen. I recommend picking it up if you're a Who fan, because limitations of the recording notwithstanding, it's worth hearing. It's a lot of fun to hear, and it's a really interesting look at the band at a really interesting time, both for them and in our culture. So The Who's Fillmore East show, it's out there now. Pick it up in whatever format's your poison. You'll have a good time. Let's talk TV here. Well, there's been some stuff I've been watching lately, and some of it's worth talking about. I'm not gonna go too deep into wrestling this week. In fact, I'm barely gonna talk about wrestling at all this week. I already talked about Bruno Sammartino. The wrestling shows have been perfectly fine this week, but we're just kind of building up to the next pay-per-view event, the largest Royal Rumble, or greatest Royal Rumble, or longest Royal Rumble, whatever they're calling it, the thing they're doing in Saudi Arabia. It's just building up to that, and it's been fine. It's been perfectly good. I've enjoyed both shows, Raw and SmackDown, lately, but I've not. It just feels like everything's kind of going toward that, and we're not there yet. So it's coming up on Friday this week, and we'll be moving on to other things. And it's a shame that with the cultural norms in Saudi Arabia, the women aren't going to be allowed to have a match over there. I doubt that any of them are even traveling over there, including the executives and ring crew. But that's sad. And you can go online and read forums and stuff and see everybody's opinion on that. I wish it were possible for there to be an awesome women's match in Saudi Arabia. The culture is that that's not possible. So we've got entirely men's matches, and you can't force a women's revolution on a culture that doesn't accept it, and on a government that doesn't accept it. You just can't make that happen, even if you really want to. So I get it. You're entitled to whatever feelings you have on that. I'm not going to be buying the pay-per-view one way or the other. That's not specifically why. I'm just not going to be doing it. So it's, you know, I don't really have an opinion other than I wish it were possible, and it's not possible. So I hope the show goes okay without it, you know? But that's virtually the extent of my thoughts on wrestling right now. I've been enjoying it the same way I always enjoy it, but there's nothing major to report yet. Maybe there will be after the pay-per-view. We'll see. What I can report on are other things I've been watching on TV, and I've got to. The first one, kind of a guilty pleasure show for me. I'm the guy who has never stopped watching Fox's Sunday Night Lineup. Like, I still watch The Simpsons, the new episodes of The Simpsons every week. If you ever doubt my loyalty, if you ever doubt that I am loyal to the bitter end, I have seen every episode of The Simpsons. That's who I am, and I'm still watching The Simpsons avidly and still having fun with it. I've never stopped watching the Fox Sunday Night Lineup. And one of the shows for me that's a guilty pleasure show that I've really been enjoying the last couple of years is The Last Man on Earth with Will Forte. God, that's a funny show, and it shouldn't be. It's incredibly stupid and in places completely immature and puerile, but I really love that show. Will Forte is hilarious, and the fact that they've got Jason Sudeikis running around in the cast again, that's a very welcome addition to me. That was the plot line that everybody cared about for a year or two of there, and I'm glad they brought him back around. Spoiler alerts, by the way, I guess. You should know that by now if you listen to the show. I really like that show, and I like that they've gotten a little bit back to sort of Forte on the road and just kind of doing stuff with his brother. And I don't know. I like that they've kind of written the kid out because the kid wasn't doing them any favors. And it's a good show. I get a lot of laughs out of it. And I love the cast. I love Will Forte. Kristen Schaal is a gift from God. She's a wonderful actress, does great voice work, does great acting work. And I love watching her every week. January Jones is funny on it. I'm blanking on the rest of the cast right now for some reason, and I'm not going to go back and fix this later. I really like Last Man on Earth. I hope that it gets renewed for another season. It's one of those things that every time it comes up to the season finale time of the year, it also could be series finale for Last Man on Earth. So I'm hoping that if it's on the bubble, that it bubbles whichever way means it gets another year. I like that show a lot. It's a guilty pleasure for me. I hope it is for you too, because I get a lot of laughs and enjoyment out of it. I like the way they play around with the last people still surviving and after an apocalyptic event. It's fun the way that they do it. I like how they play around with the seclusion of it while also making it feel like there are too many people. I like that quite a bit. And speaking of seclusion, Here's a transition for you. The other thing I've been watching a lot of lately is some of the most secluded guys in the world doing some of the hardest work in the world. I've been watching Deadliest Catch. Now, I've watched Deadliest Catch for most of the years that it's been on TV. I predate the death of Phil Harris. I am a big Deadliest Catch fan. If you don't know what it is, it's a more or less documentary-style show that follows around crab fishermen on the Bering Sea in Alaska. And it's for the most part real. I'm sure that there are, you know, some things that are a little bit more staged than others, but it's following these guys around at their jobs. And you get to know the characters and you get attached to the characters. And I say characters, I mean guys on the show. Characters is the wrong thing. They're not playing characters. They are themselves. It's documentary style. You get to know those guys and you get to care about them. And I've been enjoying this season quite a bit. There have been some really eye-opening moments on this season. I've loved following the arc of so many of the captains on the crab boats. Captain Keith on the Wizard, I used to hate him passionately. I used to think he was horrible, just a terrible person, couldn't stand the sight of him. He's now one of my favorite captains. I don't know how that happened. It seemed like maybe the dude just kind of, not chilled out, but he kind of got some sort of perspective. Maybe he found Jesus. I don't know, but I like Keith a lot more than I used to. I miss seeing the guys on the Time Bandit boat. They're not on the show this year. Last year, we saw the quote-unquote retirement of Jonathan Hillstrand, who went back out fishing this year, and he just wasn't on the show. I follow them on Twitter. That's how I know that. I miss having the Time Bandit around. They've always been one of my favorite boats, but whatever. Every year's different in some way. It's nice to have the Cornelia Marie back, have Captain Josh up in the wheelhouse. It's nice to see him and Casey doing good, and of course, everybody loves the Northwestern and Captain Sig, even though Sig's been kind of a jerk this year. I don't know what that's about. But I love this show. And the thing that keeps me coming back to the show year after year is how much of the human element is explored and how much of humanity you get to just kind of look at on the Bering Sea. There's a show that airs before Deadliest Catch called The Bait that just sort of has more person-to-person interviews with the captains, and one of the captains on the show is a guy named Captain Wild Bill, and he's in the past been known to be kind of a kooky gentleman. There are people who tell stories of, you know, Wild Bill just kind of walking along the deck with a shotgun in his hand, and it, like back in the old days, when the Bering Sea was more like the Old West, he got the name Wild Bill for a reason. Wild Bill is known to be kind of a tough dude, known to be kind of a surly dude and a old salt and whatnot. And on The Bait, on that show, it was something happened I never thought I would see. Because for the first time in his career this year, Captain Wild Bill had a man overboard situation. One of his deckhands fell overboard. And the kid in question was somebody whose family Bill knows. Like, he's watched that kid grow up, and he fell overboard. And for all anybody knew, he could die. But they got him out of the water. He's okay. But in that moment, that may have been the last they ever saw of that kid, him just falling over the side. That kind of thing happens on the Bering Sea. On The Bait, they were talking to Captain Wild Bill, dude who used to walk around just carrying a gun. They were talking to him and asked him about it, and he started talking about it, and he just started crying. He just broke down in tears. I never thought I would see that out of Wild Bill. It was such a strange sight, and it just the tone of the show just completely changed with that happening, because The Bait is a fun, raucous show where they're joking around a lot and they're making fun of each other, and suddenly Bill's just kind of crying because he almost lost one of his friend's kids, and it was a really touching moment. And there's no way to really describe what that kind of moment on a show means unless you've watched it for years and years and you start to know the individuals on the show the way that us longtime fans do. And it was interesting seeing someone that you think of as being, you know, gruff and hardened against all things get really vulnerable at the thought of what could have happened. And that's a big part of what keeps bringing me back to this show, is that it's a fascinating weekly, hour-long just examination of what could happen and how would humanity deal with that. And that's when it's at its best. When it's at its most casual, it's a bunch of guys catching crab. But it's a study of the human condition first and foremost, and that's kept me interested for a decade. And I've really been loving this season. Last season, I drifted in and out. I didn't watch as much. It was partially just it wasn't a convenient night for me to watch last year. It's a little bit easier this year. And I've really been enjoying it. It's my love for the show has been rekindled. And if you've never been a Deadliest Catch fan, that was probably just as boring to you as the wrestling parts are to the people who don't like wrestling. But I love Deadliest Catch. If you've never given it a chance, it's been on for over 10 years, but you can jump into any episode and basically be caught up. So it's a wonderful show in that way. They do a very good job of the show does a very good job of keeping itself accessible to the new viewer. And you should really check out an episode if you never have. It's on Discovery every week. So check out Deadliest Catch sometime if you haven't before. It's one of my favorite shows, dating back 10 years probably, and I see no reason for that to stop now. So please join me, won't you, in watching the show sometime. Okay, short episode this week. I told you I was going to keep this one basic. I hope that's not a problem for anybody. I'm lucky that I got to put this together this week, so I'm spitting it out as fast as I can and turning it as quick as I can. Thanks a lot for listening. I have a recommendation for you for another podcast to listen to. I mentioned my buddy Dan in last week's podcast. He's a young man who worked under... young man. He's a grown adult now who worked underneath me at the college library that he used to work at. And he's a Pearl Jam fan, and I discussed him liking the self-titled Pearl Jam album quite a bit. And Dan's a really good guy. We got in touch after that episode because I mentioned him, and he was like, hey, feel free to mention me. So I'm going to go him one better than just mentioning him, and I'm going to mention his podcast. Check out the Better Questions podcast is the name of it. It's on CastBox. I found it there pretty easy. I just typed the Better Questions podcast in, and up it came. It's a Christian-themed podcast, but it's about asking better and deeper questions than the stuff that you normally do in a church setting. Episodes that they've got up right now, they've got three episodes. Episode 0, How Old is the Earth? Episode 1, Why Do Bad Things Happen? Part 1. And Episode 2, Why Do Bad Things Happen? Part 2. It's a good listen. It's they do a very good job of asking better questions. So, they've in no way asked me to do that. I'm not getting any money from them for doing that. It's friends helping friends. Go check out the Better Questions podcast. They're worth your listen, especially if you're a Christian individual who struggles with some of the bigger questions. And with that, folks, that wraps up this episode of Empty Checking. Really appreciate you checking in on me here, spending a little less time than usual with me, but I hope it was quality, even if not quantity. I've got some cool stuff on the horizon, or what I think is cool stuff, anyway, on the horizon, and come back and check it out with me as the weeks go on. We'll be back here next week. I wasn't sure we would be this week, but we will be next week. So thanks a lot for your time. Thanks a lot for telling your friends. If you haven't told a friend, as I always say, if you like it, tell a friend. If you hate it, tell an enemy. I just appreciate that you stuck with me this long. Thanks a lot for making me part of your week. Hope you're having a good one. And as always, check us out next time. It's hard thinking of a joke to put here every week.